the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, we've always talked about retirement. Where do you want to live? Do you want to stay where you are, downsize, move to another state? Or today's program, we're going to talk about living overseas. Joining me on the program is Dan Prescher from International Living. And Dan, you are basically following your own advice. You've been living overseas. And I wonder if you can just tell us a little bit about that. What led you to do that and how you are enjoying it? How has it worked out?
Sure, Jim. Happy to be here. It worked out great, and I owe it all to my wife. We were sitting in Omaha, Nebraska in about 2000, the year 2000, saying never another winter in Omaha. She was a longtime subscriber to International Living, and she said, you know, it says here that there are places where you can live where the weather's nice all year long, and it's cheaper. So we started talking to the folks at International Living. They asked us if we wanted to move to Ecuador and start writing for them. We did in 2001, and we've been living full-time abroad since then, and it's worked out great. Don't regret a minute of it.
Now, Dan, have you found is, you know, some of my clients, I have clients that live in Mexico, and they tell me it is much cheaper to live there, the cost of living, and it's surprising what your money buys. The American dollar goes a long way. Have you found that generally to be the case in the places where you've lived, whether it's Ecuador or elsewhere?
I have to tell you, almost every place that we've lived in the last 20 years, and we've lived in 7 different Latin American communities in 4 different countries, has been cheaper than the U.S., and we haven't given up anything in quality of life. So healthcare, food, rent, taxes, all lower than in the United States, better weather, and haven't had to sacrifice for healthcare, any of that. So yeah, it's been a fair trade in our book.
So in the places that you're living, I assume that you and your wife want a cosmopolitan life, nice restaurants, shopping centers, movie theaters. You mentioned access to healthcare. You stayed mainly in major cities, or have you had to go maybe off the beaten path to even live cheaper?
Well, it's been all over the board. And as you say, the bigger the metropolitan area you're in, the more money you can spend because your choices are better. The things you can spend money on are much more available. But we've lived in, one of our favorite places to live was Cotacachi, Ecuador, which is a village up in the Andes of about 7,000 people. And you can walk from one end of town to the other in 20 minutes. And that has been by far one of the nicest places that we've ever lived. And the cost of living, bang for buck, remarkably good up there.
Dan, have you ever felt at risk or any danger at any time living overseas? Because that's one thing, you know, you hear stories in the news, whether it's drug cartels in Mexico or elsewhere. Have you ever come across any risk or danger that you have sensed?
None that I haven't sensed in the United States, Jim. And that's, I think that just comes down to being aware of your surroundings. The risks might be a little different, but they're no greater anywhere else in the world than they are in the United States. Certainly not in any of the places that my wife and I have chosen to live. All very safe, very manageable places. And that includes 3 places in Mexico.
Now, you said when you first decided to do this, you went to Ecuador. Did you take a speed language course prior to heading down there, or did you pick it up? I know that in graduate school, I spoke Spanish fluently, but unfortunately, I didn't use it as much. But when you're put in a situation where you have to speak the language, it comes more easily.
You're absolutely right. We did take some crash Spanish courses before we went to Ecuador. Once we got there, we realized that they weren't going to do us much good. The speed at which people speak, the idioms are different, the accents are different. So we pretty much got thrown in the deep end, and we really quickly learned restaurant and taxi Spanish. We learned how to get where we wanted to go and eat what we wanted to eat. And everything outside of that was icing on the cake. That didn't take long at all, and it served us well.
Okay, so one of the key things I assume when you're going to live overseas, depending where you're living, and especially if it's a non-English-speaking country, in other words, it's Spanish, Portuguese, or some other language, knowing and understanding the language is something that you're going to want to do. Dan, what about some of the other things? For example, let's say I'm getting ready to retire. I'm going to be receiving Social Security. I'm not sure what the Medicare rules are for living overseas, but you may be dealing with Medicare or some kind of Medicare insurance, or maybe you have to get a program in the country that you live in, or maybe they provide that care. What are some of the things that are also necessary? For example, opening up a bank account, a passport, keeping that up to date, permission, or I don't know if they have something like a green card with the government that you're allowed to live there. Can you explain some of those things and what you have to go through?
Sure. It differs from country to country. I'm most familiar with Latin American countries because that's where I've spent my time abroad. Every Latin American country has a visa program that retirees can join to get a visa, a residency visa, a permanent residency visa. Almost all of them you can visit for anywhere from a month to 3 months on a tourist visa. So trying before you buy is our number one piece of advice. You've got to get your boots on the ground in a place that sounds interesting to you. See what kind of a gut feeling you get from it. See if it even interests you at all. And after you're there, as long as you want to be, to be comfortable with it, you will learn about what banks are best to bank with, how to get your Social Security to that country. In every country we've lived in, there are national banks that will allow direct deposit of Social Security payments from the United States. So if you don't want to use your ATM card to access a U.S. bank account, you can have your Social Security sent directly to your local bank. How to start your utilities up, how to join the local healthcare system. It varies from country to country, but these are things that you would explore if you move from Washington State to Florida or from New York to Wisconsin. They're just a little bit different is all, and they're in another language. So there is that challenge to meet.
You know, you bring up a good point because we often advise our clients who are thinking of moving out of state when they retire that wherever they're going to, that they rent maybe for the first 6 months, get to know the place, locale, locations, access, getting around the town, and really decide is, hey, do I really want to live here? Before, you know, just going there and buying the first thing you see or a real estate agent shows you. So basically, trial and error is sort of a very important thing, especially when you're, I would think more so, Dan, if you're going to a foreign country.
Oh, it's absolutely important. And almost any place that you're likely to go, there will be an expat community there of some kind to tap into. Talk to people, find out how they do things, find out where the discos are that you don't want to live by, find out where the car shop is that you don't want to live by, find the quiet neighborhoods if that's what you're after. A little time on the ground without making a buying decision will serve you well later. And if it turns out that that's not the place you want to be, great. Try someplace else. It's not like jumping off a cliff. I mean, Susan and I are what we now call serial relocators. We've lived in seven different communities in four different Latin American countries. And every time we move, it gets a little easier. You learn the ropes, you know the mistakes to avoid, and it's not a one-way trip. And if you decide this overseas life isn't for me, I'm going back to the States or Canada or wherever you came from, you're wiser for it. You've made a sound decision.
Now, you said, you know, you're sitting there in Omaha and you don't want to go through another winter. Were you reading International Living? Is this what first caught maybe your wife's interest? Was this something that was brought up, somebody recommended to you, or were you just thinking of, hey, we'd like to do this someday?
Susan was a longtime subscriber to International Living. They had been publishing for a long time at that time. I think they started in 1979. So that's 40 years of reporting on what it's like to retire and live abroad. Susan was sold on it. She had to sell me, which is an important part of any couple making a move like this. You both have to be on board with it. But after a couple exploratory trips and after talking to people who had done it, after reading the material, doing the research, she sold me and we did it. And I might add that nowadays the research is a lot easier to do than it was 20 years ago back when we decided to make the move. Everything is at your fingertips online. There's no excuse for not doing the research. And International Living is one of those valuable resources that we used.
So let's talk about some of the legal things that are necessary when you move overseas. Obviously, you talked about getting a visa, either resident or permanent, if eventually you're going to spend a lot of time there, more than 3 months. You have to have a passport. What are some of the other legal type documents you found that are very important when you're living overseas?
Well, just to establish residency, a lot of countries now will require a criminal background check. I was just talking to a lawyer in Ecuador today, and she said that now you need a state document and a federal document from the United States to apply for residency there. Not many people require a health certificate now, that has gone by the boards, but for a residency visa in the Latin American countries I'm familiar with, you'll also need to prove some sort of basic income, especially for a retirement visa. You may have to show that you're making $800, $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 a month from an annuity, a pension, Social Security, some source. You'll have to be able to show that. And the amount depends on the country. All of that stuff you should have in your hand and ready to go before you even arrive in country. And I think that brings up a good point. Having a qualified legal representative or legal resource in country puts you miles ahead in this area. If you have somebody you trust that is on the ground there that you know can tell you what documents you need, how long it's going to take, what the costs will be, you're miles ahead.
Now, is this something that International Living provides as they cover international living? In other words, let's just say I'm like you. I decide I want to go down to Ecuador, or maybe Mexico or Costa Rica. I want to find out as much things that I need to know legally to make that transition. Is this something that you cover in the magazine?
It's something that we cover in the magazine in specific stories. A lot of that is covered in what we call our country owner's manuals that are available at the bookstore online. A lot of them will have Rolodexes of contacts in the back, legal contacts, visa contacts, real estate contacts, healthcare contacts. Those contacts obviously change a lot, and they're recommendations that we get from people who are on the ground there and have dealt with them. No warranty implied or expressed, but those are contacts whose names we hear coming up often. So they're a good place to start. As I mentioned earlier, if you rent before you buy, if you spend some time on the ground, you'll talk to expats and locals who have used those resources before. The same names will keep coming up. And especially in Latin America, reputation is hugely important. You don't always have a Better Business Bureau to go check people out on. You don't always have comparables and multiple listing services like you do with real estate in the United States. So reputation, track record, hugely important in a lot of these communities that you might move to. So ask around, do your research, network, that is hugely important.
Yeah, it would seem like if your publication publishes like fact books, contacts, that would be extremely important when you're doing your due diligence. Let me ask you this. You know, when you live in the United States, let's say I live in California, I decide I'm going to go retire in Nevada or Arizona, I'm dealing with the same currency. I'm dealing mainly with the same laws of the United States. How much different is that than overseas? Because obviously, you have currency exchanges, and recently the dollar has been appreciating over the last couple of years as the Fed has raised interest rates. I suspect if you're in Latin America and the dollar's going up, you suddenly find that your checks that you get each month buys a lot more.
That's hugely important. And it's something that I've started to call income arbitrage. I think I checked the exchange rate for the Mexican peso this morning. It's over 19 to 1, which makes Mexico an incredible bargain for people spending U.S. dollars right now. It is just nuts affordable. And there are places you can move like Panama and Ecuador that already use the American dollar. So exchange rates aren't a consideration in places like that. But you're absolutely right. You'll have to deal with currency exchanges in some of these places. You'll have to find out how to transfer your money effectively in and out. My wife and I use ATMs now almost exclusively because they're everywhere. They give the best local exchange rate for that day, and they're just, for us, more effective than using a local bank. Everybody's strategies differ, which is why, again, it's so important to spend some time on the ground checking it out.
I want to cover medical for a minute because, especially if you're going to live overseas and you're retired, you're getting older, you're aging, having access to medical care in quality Medicare is so important. And, you know, things like prescription drugs. Have you noticed any difference between, let's say, living in Mexico or Ecuador compared to, let's say, living in the United States when it comes to, let's say, comparing medical care?
I can honestly say that in every major metropolitan area we've lived in, the medical care has been equal to or better than medical care in the United States. And that has a lot to do with the kind of doctor-patient relationship that is still practiced in much of Latin America. I've had doctors in Latin America that have given me their cell phone numbers in case I had questions. I can call them up. The doctor takes your medical history in every clinic that I have ever been in Latin America. That being said, Medicare cannot be used outside the United States right now. And Medicare for people 65 and over in the United States is probably the best medical insurance deal available right now. If Medicare is important to you, even if you live abroad, even if you're a member of one of the national healthcare systems, say in Costa Rica or Panama or Mexico or Nicaragua, a lot of U.S. expats will keep up their Medicare payments in case they want to go back sometime. Because as you know, if you're out of the system for a certain amount of time, you'll be penalized if you want to join Medicare again. We always kept up our research on our Medicare payments. And, you know, who knows? We may be back in the States using it at some point in the future. So my personal advice is not to give it up, even if you can't use it abroad.
Dan, what about the cost? So Medicare doesn't cover you living in another country. What is the cost of healthcare? In other words, I assume you buy some kind of health insurance. Can you explain and go into that a little bit?
Sure. It varies from country to country. Every country that I've lived in Latin America, has a national healthcare scheme that everybody can take advantage of. And that's usually based on the Social Security system. So the costs are extremely low every month, if any at all. They also have private healthcare systems where you can buy health insurance just like you do in the United States, AIG or some other national health insurance company. So you can get private care. A lot of expats I know do a combination of the two. They join the national healthcare system for catastrophic and long-term medical expenses. And then they have either a private health insurance plan or they pay out of pocket. Because the health insurance and out-of-pocket costs in many of the countries that I've lived in is usually a third to a quarter or less of what it costs in the United States. It is always cheaper, in my experience, no matter how you access medical care, to do it outside the United States.
Dan, have you found, and we hear stories politically, being an election year, about how the cost of drugs are so much cheaper overseas, whether it's in Canada, Europe, or someplace else? Have you found that to be the case?
Absolutely. Personal experience. I take allopurinol because I suffer from gout a little bit. I can get 3 months' worth of allopurinol for $21 in Ecuador over the counter. I can't get allopurinol in the United States without joining a healthcare system, without having insurance, without seeing a doctor, without getting a prescription. And then it costs significantly more than that. Insulin is something that we've all heard about. There are people who are going across the border to Canada and Mexico to get life-saving insulin that they can't afford in the United States. I'm not going to go on a political rant here. I don't know why that is. I only know that it's not that way outside the United States, and I don't know why.
One of the things I've noticed in my practice, since we specialize in retirement planning, is we're seeing a lot more, especially living here in California, where everything's expensive, taxes are high, along with the cost of living. People are moving like I've never seen before. They're going to other states, Arizona, Florida, Texas, Nevada, and Idaho is another place where the cost of living is cheaper. Overall, we have a program that we use for our clients. I can take, like, let's say you live in San Diego and you want to go to, I don't know, Phoenix, Arizona or Las Vegas. I can plug in and tell you what your cost of living savings will be. Have you found generally, is it 40, 50% cheaper? I mean, could a person live well on $2,000 to $3,000 a month where you are today?
Absolutely. My standard of assessment is just based on my own personal experience and the experience of the expats that I talk to. They can usually cut their cost of living in half, depending on where they lived in the United States, all in for rent, healthcare, property tax, and it's often less than that. We know people who can live on a median Social Security payment, which I believe now is $850 to $1,200 a month. We just wrote a book on how to live abroad for $2,500 a month and not give up anything. It depends completely on what your lifestyle is, what you want to spend money on, how much you were making back where you lived. But to live on $1,500 to $3,000 a month in any of the places that we've lived in, live well, not sacrifice for healthcare or quality of living, completely doable.
And Dan, are there any situations where if you are living in a country, you have to pay that country taxes? I know the U.S. has various tax treaties with various countries, but you know, let's just say, let's make this easy. Just say you're making $50,000 a year of income, whether it's Social Security, dividends, interest, or a pension. Do foreign countries tax you on that income?
No country that I have lived in taxes foreign income. They will all tax income that you earn in that country. And it's your obligation to file those taxes in that country. And as you know, if you're a U.S. citizen, you're always obliged to file your taxes no matter where you live or where you make your money. The U.S. is one of the few countries on the planet that taxes worldwide income. So you're always obliged to file your U.S. taxes no matter where you live. But if you don't make money in any of the Latin American countries I've lived in, you don't pay taxes on income there.
So generally assume that most people, if they would have to pay taxes, it would be like maybe you have a bank account, and you have some certificates of deposit, you're earning interest, and you're going to pay that. But I assume that most Americans are receiving either Social Security, pension checks, and if they have investments, I suspect most of those investments are mainly in the U.S.
That's correct. And those would not impinge on the local tax system in any way that I'm aware of. That's transparent to the local tax system in every Latin American country that I've lived in.
So you've been doing this now for quite some time. Is there any negatives that you've experienced? And if so, what were they?
Oh, you have to have a real tolerance for novelty and challenge, because every day in a country outside the one that you're born in and used to can be a challenge. You'll have language challenges, cultural challenges. No matter what the United States is, no matter what else people think about it, it is probably the most convenient country on the planet. You can get anything you want with a phone call or the click of a mouse. Most of the rest of the world is not like that, and you have to get used to that. And no place outside the United States is just U.S. light. It's not just America at half the cost. They're their own cultures. They have their own economic considerations, their own political systems. And if you move abroad expecting every place to be just like the United States, only cheaper, you're going to be sorely disappointed. So get ready for that. You need a sense of humor, you need patience, and you need an appetite for adventure and challenge. Then you'll be a happy expat.
I want to talk about just simple things like groceries. I have a friend who lives in Switzerland, and he came to visit. This was a number of years ago, and we took him to a Costco and a Whole Foods, and he was just, Dan, blown away, because he had never seen a Costco or anything like that in Switzerland, and he had never seen anything like Whole Foods. He says, my goodness, the selection and the amount of things that you have here in the U.S., do you have American companies down there? I mean, I know fast food, it's easy, you know, Coca-Cola is ubiquitous. Are there any American companies down there? In other words, I know Walmart is expanding overseas. I'm not sure about Costco. But what about your selections for shopping, whether it's groceries or just going to a shopping mall?
20 years ago, when we first moved abroad, 19 years ago, I guess, that was a challenge. We were definitely not spoiled for choice. Our choices as consumers were much more limited. That's changed in a big way, especially throughout Latin America. There are local companies in Mexico, in Ecuador, in Panama, in Costa Rica, manufacturers that are making their own appliances, their own cars, their own consumer goods, their own foods. If you're in any major metropolitan area throughout Latin America, which is what I'm familiar with, you will have close to the same kind of choice that you have in the United States. That being said, if you live up in Cotacachi, you might have to take the bus 10 minutes down the road to get to the next biggest town to shop at a supermarket that you'd be familiar with. You might just have to settle for not having 8 kinds of roasted red peppers or 20 kinds of cornflakes to choose from for breakfast. For me and my wife now, that's not a hardship anymore. When we come back to the States and we wander through a Walmart or we wander through a Shopko, we're like your friend from Europe. We're gobsmacked by the choice. It seems a little overwhelming and overdone to us now. Not that we don't enjoy it. I mean, you get used to it. You certainly do. But you get used to not having that kind of overwhelming choice too. And it's actually not a big sacrifice in our book.
What about things like, let's talk about watching television, you know, getting American news, whether it's CNN, Fox, or even things like Netflix or Amazon Prime?
The internet has changed everything. Instant messaging had just started up when Susan and I first moved abroad back in the day. Now we can have Skype video calls with our granddaughter, no matter where we are in the world. You can get Netflix anywhere you are. You can get satellite TV. We had satellite TV in Cotacachi, Ecuador. The selection is different. The rights management with U.S. programming is a little different. But we haven't lived any place where we couldn't watch the World Series or the Super Bowl or catch up with the daily news. Now we live on our laptops, quite frankly. I mean, we do that when we're in the States as well. We were cord cutters from way back. If we can't get it on our laptop, we usually don't miss it. And we can get everything we need from Netflix to the news to sports right on our laptops. And anywhere there's an internet connection, anywhere in the world, you can get the same thing.
So basically all the conveniences we think of living in the U.S., shopping, restaurants, medical care, entertainment, all of that stuff is available. It's just available at a much cheaper cost.
Unless you want U.S. goods, if you actually want that stuff from the U.S. or that's imported into another country, and this goes for electronics, it goes for cars, it goes for food items, you will pay more. You can get it. It's widely available, but you'll pay much more than local products, which in my experience now, after being abroad for almost 20 years, are just as good, but a lot cheaper.
And what about Amazon? Does Amazon deliver there?
Good question. That in Mexico now, there is a Mexican Amazon outlet that will deliver things to you, Amazon.mx. And that's, as you probably suspect, will soon be the case in more and more and more countries abroad. However, if you want your mail delivered, the mail service in many of these countries is not the equivalent of the United States. You'll have to wait a week or a month or two or find somebody to bring it down to you. There are workarounds, and expats are excellent at working around that stuff. But it's getting more and more convenient as time goes on. I have a feeling that in 5 years, we'll be talking about a whole different set of challenges, and Amazon and mail will not be among them.
So, Dan, as we conclude here, if, let's say I'm a couple, we're getting close to retirement, we want to do a lot of traveling, and all of a sudden we're thinking, hey, it might be nice to live abroad, what are some of the first steps that you would recommend a person take to become familiar and really decide if this is really a good choice for you?
First, of course, naturally, get on internationalliving.com and start doing the research on the places that interest you. Get on some of the Facebook pages and the other social media outlets. Every expat community, every place on earth has a Facebook page now. You can talk in real time to people who are living the life in the places that interest you. Pick their brains. Work on those bulletin boards. Find out what they're talking about, what their challenges are. Then make your plans based around what your deal breakers are. If you need a bowling alley nearby to be happy, that's a deal breaker. It's not silly. It's not ridiculous. Whatever your deal breakers are, find out if you can get those or a reasonable facsimile or substitute where you're planning on going. Then and only then, go and spend as much time on the ground in the places that make your shortlist as you possibly can, see how you feel about them. And you'll get a gut feeling almost immediately, no matter how much research you do, you'll get a gut feeling one way or another from a place. Critically important. Just do that research, get your boots on the ground, and make a decision.
It seems to me also learning the language, because if you move to a foreign country that doesn't speak English or English isn't the native language, you're going to have to learn that. And Dan, wouldn't you recommend, let's say I'm thinking of doing this in a couple of years, why not start out by taking a vacation? You know, take 2 or 3 weeks to go there and just mosey around and say, hey, do you think we could envision ourselves living here?
That's how most people do it. They start naturally thinking about the places where they've had the most fun vacations. That can actually be a danger. What you want to do is spend enough time in a place that it's not a vacation anymore, that you actually have to think about getting a phone line installed or having your electricity come back up once it's out, or doing your own shopping for food, and be there during off season. Every place has a high season where the weather is great and everybody's having fun. Every place has a low season as well. If you want to see what it's actually like to live there, be there during the low season and spend a month or two. Then you'll get a real sense for what it's like to live there year round. Then you'll know.
And then also you publish books on specific countries, which to me, if I was doing due diligence, not only just getting on your site, but I'd probably want to get a book of a place I want to visit or are planning on living.
And the nice thing about books is you can take them with you. So you'll have that resource with you, even if for some reason you can't get on the internet and look up that resource instantly. Those are all available on the International Living Bookstore, which is just a menu choice once you're on internationalliving.com. You can find all of those resources there, and then you'll have that book with you when you actually hit the ground.
And the name of the website, once again, is International Living, all one word. And we've been speaking with Dan Prescher. Well, Dan, thanks for coming on the program. Sounds like it's a great way, especially for some people, a very viable option when you talk about cutting your living cost in half, or as your new book talks about, living well on $2,500 a month. I don't know too many places in the U.S. you can do that.
If anybody would know, you would, Jim.
All right. Well, listen, Dan, thanks again for coming on the program.
You bet. Good talking to you, Jim. Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.